So as you've heard already today, Theresa May will hold Brexit talks with our five main political parties at Stormont later. Let's speak to our political editor, Mark Devonport. Good morning to you, Mark.
Morning, good day.
Mark, yesterday the PM told business leaders she wanted changes to the controversial backstop plan to prevent those possible checkpoints, but she did indicate that she did not seek to scrap it.
Yes, she talked about the need for an insurance policy come what may, that there will be no hard border. I think it's gone down a bit badly with some Brexiteers, but frankly, I don't think anybody realistically thinks that the EU would simply agree to stick the Northern Ireland Protocol to its EU withdrawal agreement in the bin. Indeed, even some of the Brexiteers themselves have signed up to something called a Better Deal, which has its own version of a Northern Ireland Protocol, even though there might be arguments about whether it will work or not. I'm not sure that I would get too excited about this. The DUP has called for legally binding changes. She says she wants legally binding changes. The problem is that we're only a few weeks away from the Brexit date, and we still don't know what those changes are. So we do seem to be running out of time.
Yeah, the clock is ticking. What else did you take from yesterday's speech, Mark?
Well, obviously, there was a lot of fine words about guaranteeing there'd be no hard border and seeking a deal that would command the support across the community here. But they say fine words, butter no parsnips. There was really very little detail to analyse in it. And, I think she got quite a generous response from our local business community because a number of them have got quite exposed. They don't like getting into the sort of political to and fro. They got in there in order to defend the backstop because they felt that having some kind of a deal was very necessary. They got shot at for their troubles, metaphorically at any rate, particularly by the likes of Sammy Wilson and the DUP. And so I think they were pretty generous in terms of not quibbling with her about the garden path that she'd led them down.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe because they just think that there's still a little bit further to go here and they need to keep in with the government in case they can use their influence to have some kind of a deal rather than no deal at all.
So with all that said, some will ask, what was the point of yesterday? What's the point of the entire visit?
If you were a cynic, you might say, well, it eats up a bit of time. She doesn't have any definite proposal yet to take to Brussels. She's got these Conservative MPs over in London who are still looking at various details. They were supposedly going to come over here, but they don't seem to have made good on that. So I think they're still arguing over possible ways forward. So she's going to Brussels on Thursday, still possibly at a stage where she doesn't have a definite plan to put to Brussels. So if you were going to be cynical, it eats up a bit of time and shows that unlike what the SNP has claimed recently, she doesn't believe she's tearing up the Good Friday Agreement.
So is the plan then to run down the clock until MPs perhaps feel they have no other option but to get behind her deal?
Well, you're a terrible cynic, aren't you,
Vinny? I'm just asking the question though, Mark.
But yeah, look, if, say, the Brexiteers do come up with some ideas and then Theresa May takes them over and faithfully puts them to the EU and the EU says, I don't think so. And she comes back relatively empty handed, maybe with a few more letters. Then that's going to be mid to late February. And then she'll be saying, well, we haven't got exactly what you want from the EU. But there is this deal that 27 of them actually would sign up to, which I have in my pocket, which I came up with earlier. And so she may try and resell that deal or she may go for an extension. We don't really know. But we are in a situation where coming up with a complete alternative that the EU will sign off on seems completely politically unrealistic, whether it involves cameras or whatever.
She's meeting the parties today. What difference can that really make? Because as we all know, the Stormont's party will give the PM two very different messages about the backstop.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to just pull in completely different directions. She may try and assess from what she gets whether there's any kind of compromise out there. There aren't a lot of compromises. I do think it's really a case of going through the motions and being seen to be doing this. And no doubt there'll be a nod towards the restoration of devolution. But we all know that she can't make much progress in relation to that until we're clear in the terms of the direction that we're going forward in relation to Brexit.
Cynical, Mark Devonport. Can we talk just briefly about those other possible, the alternative arrangements to the backstop that some MPs have been looking at? For example, this trusted trader scheme and mutual recognition.
Yeah, I mean, if you take it as read that you don't have a kind of a list of checkpoints along the border, or a series of checkpoints along the border, which both governments have said they won't have, then you have to wonder how can you keep to sort of international trade regulations in other ways. And the sort of schemes that they've been coming up with would involve, you know, the likes of big companies declaring in advance what kind of goods they were intended to move across the border, and then reporting them, you know, from their laptops, as you might declare your tax from your home, and you know, the customs authorities or whoever it will be would check that indeed, yes, that's left the warehouse and this has arrived there. So I suppose that's the idea, to kind of de-dramatize it and not make it a big sort of structure on the border. Now, we have now had this report in the Sun newspaper, which I know you've been looking at.
I have indeed. That was my next question, Mark.
Well, I mean, you know, that is, if they do take that, that will be yet another government U-turn, because I can remember being briefed back in 2017 that no infrastructure on the border also included the use of cameras. So if they do go for the use of automatic number plate recognition cameras, that would certainly be a change in government policy. But they're obviously kind of scratching around at the moment, looking at all sorts of things. And certainly Tom Newton Dunn seems to have got hold in the Sun of an 11-page briefing document which suggests that they're doing just that, looking at this with the Japanese firm Fujitsu.
Who are refusing to confirm or deny the reports, although there is a tweet from, I think it's January 3rd, from the Fujitsu UK Twitter account that says, "Technology is the key to ensuring the Northern Irish border remains open once the UK has left the EU. Working with industry and users off the border, Fujitsu is trialling potential solutions to make an open border a reality."
Yes, and according to the report in the Sun, they've done something similar in some African borders, the use of number plate recognition cameras, and so they're trying to sell it for use in Northern Ireland. Now, I do hope that Steve Barclay, the Brexit secretary, looks not only at whatever videos and briefings Fujitsu has supplied to him, but also at some news footage of a man with an angle grinder cutting down a surveillance camera in rioting in North Belfast just a couple of years back, because obviously there's a security concern about any infrastructure if it's placed close to the border, and that's why people have been ruling this out for a while. So there are problems. Now, number plate recognition cameras, I think, are used in Northern Ireland by the police for law enforcement purposes, so it's not completely impossible that they might also be deployed, I suppose, for other purposes. But where do you put them? If you put them on the border, they could potentially be targets for attack. The PSNI has already talked about the possibility there. If you bring them back then into safer areas, say if you think about the M1 between Dublin and Belfast, you bring them back to Banbridge or Sprucefield, well, they may be a lot safer there, but then you're creating, if you like, not so much a watertight measure around the border, but something that's got a sieve with a lot of holes in it, because there'll have been many crossing points and many possible routes that people who don't want to declare their goods will have been able to take without getting to where the number plate recognition cameras are.
Okay, just finally, Mark, Theresa May, she told us this was the best deal we could get.
Yes, and it's been a complete turnaround, and, you know, obviously, there was a bit of irony there that back in, I think, November it was, she went to Queen's University saying if the deal that she negotiated, including the backstop, was rejected, that would lead to division and uncertainty. And now she came 10 weeks later saying, "Ah, well, that's out the window, but I still want to ensure there's no division and uncertainty." So, you know, this is the problem, that it's all a bit too vague right now for a situation where we are leaving the EU, as things stand, next month. And, you know, there's only so much that can be done in terms of the kind of detailed work that is required. And I see that the Sun report says that the Fujitsu scheme will be ready, I think, for trialling, did they say, as early as next month? Well, that's a bit too late at this stage.
Okay, Mark, pleasure as always. Thank you very much. So many questions still remaining to be answered. On the line now, we have the Deputy Leader for the Alliance Party, Stephen Farry. Good morning to you, Stephen.
Morning, Vinny.
What are you hoping to happen from your talks with the PM today?
Well, hoping that she gets a bit of reality and understands that her choices are limited in terms of the way forward, and the fact that she has shaped the choices that are out there. I mean, we can either cancel Brexit or reconsider Brexit, or if we want to do a negotiated Brexit, it has to be on the basis of the deal that she has already agreed with the European Union, and that includes a backstop. And frankly, if she's having difficulty getting that through Parliament, then she has another option, which is to build a coalition across the centre ground rather than simply pandering to the extremists in her own party and to the DUP. And if you agree a soft Brexit around a customs union and a single market solution, then you actually will make it fairly certain that the backstop will never need to be triggered.
How realistic is that, Stephen Farry? Because you know that could potentially split the Tory party.
Well, this is the problem. This is the choice she has to make. Can she actually deliver something that works for the country? Or does she wish to prioritise the unity of her own party and in the process undermine the economy and the cohesion of the UK? That's the very blunt choice that faces her. And up to now, it's very clear she has prioritised the unity of her own party over facing up to the reality of the situation she and her own party created, because Brexit itself was a UK creation. It's not a problem for Ireland. It's not a problem that was created by the European Union. They're seeking to respond to a very difficult situation that has been created, particularly a challenge for Northern Ireland, given all of the contradictions and ambiguities that exist in our society, where we need that type of joint membership of the European Union to try to manage those.
Do you genuinely believe that the Labour Party may be actually interested in that coalition deal?
Have you seen any
indication that they might?
Well, there are some indications, certainly in terms of some of the backbench members in the Labour Party, and the Lib Dems, the SNP, and who knows where Jeremy Corbyn may end up himself. But that is the only other viable route for her. And when she did talk about doing that a few weeks ago after the meaningful vote failed, she did seek to reach out, but that seemed to run out of steam very, very quickly, and instead she went back to her own party. And even today, yesterday, when she was over trying to give reassurances over the backstop, at the same time she has empowered her own civil servants in London to talk and try to mediate between different wings of the Conservative Party around this half-baked notion of the Malthouse Compromise, which is nothing of the sort, and again is a complete and utter delusion and denial of reality. The same thing applies in terms of what we're hearing about these so-called technological solutions. I mean, technology can only ever be a means to an end. Technology is not a border regime. Technology can make your border interface run a lot more smoothly, and there are without doubt some progress that can be made in technology, but the bottom line is there will be a need for physical checks if you have a situation where there's a different customs and a different regulatory regime on either side of the land border in Ireland, and that's the blunt reality. So the only way to avoid a border in Ireland is for either the whole UK or Northern Ireland alone to be in the same customs zone and to maintain sufficient level of regulations with the European Union.
You'll have heard, Stephen, already this morning people say that the PM is simply going through the motions and running down the clock, and therefore, at the risk of sounding cynical again, that this meeting today with yourself and the other main parties here is pointless.
Well, I mean, we are certainly alert to that. The times that have been scheduled for the meetings are fairly brief, to be blunt in that regard.
So along, how will it work for you today? Is it an hour, 2 hours?
2 hours. I mean, it could be a 15-20 minute meeting. I think last time we met with the Prime Minister, we had a 15 meeting. Given our ability sometimes to make points, it probably stretched closer to half an hour. But I mean, that is an indication of how quickly she's running through these particular meetings. So,
and can I just check with you, is that 15 minutes per party?
Yep. Well, that's certainly our understanding as things stand at the moment. Now, we'll make our points, and we'll make our points as efficiently as we can. But, yeah.
But you know how people will hear that and think, well, what can you really do within 15, maybe half an hour? So what will your opening speech be? What will you try and sell to the PM?
Well, we're looking to hear back from her as to what it is that she wants to say to us in terms of explaining where things are at, and we'll come back and explain hopefully some of the realities as we see them, and frankly what her choices are. I mean, we will have to make our own concerns felt to her about, in effect, the bad faith that has been shown where she came in December. And at that time, we did give tacit support. I mean, we're not enthusiasts for Brexit by any stretch of the imagination, but we recognise that the withdrawal agreement, as negotiated by her, including the open-ended backstop, was a realistic way forward. So in good faith, we lent our support to that, as did the business community, civil society here in Northern Ireland, and that was very quickly abandoned. And we want to know now how she's going to get this over the line. And if you're saying as well, just to add to the cynicism, Vinny, that this is about running the clock down and somehow people will break it.
Well, that's what others have suggested, Stephen, that you know, with the end of March isn't that far away.
Yeah, and that may well be the case. Some people talk about, well, Europe does these last-minute negotiations, but this is a different type of situation. And in these other negotiations, people are coming to the table with various wish lists and things they want to try to get off each other. If the negotiations aren't successful, then you just go back to the status quo. In the event that these negotiations are unsuccessful, we default to a no deal. So we're potentially playing a massive game of chicken, and you may think that people may well blink at the last minute, but over the next 6-7 weeks, businesses are dealing with massive uncertainty, and people will end up having to vote with their feet. Businesses can't simply wait to the 29th of March for a decision on what's going to happen and go, well, that's okay, then we now know what's happening. They will have to make decisions ahead of time in that regard. And you could see companies having to relocate some of their activities. Staff may be put on notice. So the notion that people have this luxury of just running the clock down and keeping talking, going round and round in circles, re-examining ideas that were explored previously, I think is incredibly damaging and irresponsible.
Okay, Stephen Farry from the Alliance Party, thank you very much. 030 30 80 55 55. John Campbell is here, our business and economics editor. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning.
Talk us through this Fujitsu thing, the story in the Sun newspaper, and this secret high-tech plan for a tracking system to monitor vehicles passing over the border.
We now seem to be onto what's known as the Rwandan model. So Rwanda, that African country, which has certainly come a long way since many people were slaughtered in a bloody genocide about 20 or 30 years ago. It certainly developed because some Brexit supporters think that it could provide the key to the border issue. So what we have this morning is a story in The Sun where they've got hold of an 11-page document. It looks a bit like a brochure, basically, from the Japanese technology company Fujitsu, which suggests something called the drive-through border. So a lot of that is basically to do with GPS and tracking technology. But basically, you kind of have an app. You have what's known as a geofence at the border, which is a combination of what's known as RFID technology, which is like a tracking chip plus GPS, and it would all kind of work through those things. Now, that is the kind of the top line around it. But once you delve into some of the particularities of that story, there's some difficulties emerge. First of all, it talks about the use of cameras, which is something that the Prime Minister and the NIO and others ruled out way back when, saying no new infrastructure. And it also talks about customs officials to carry out spot checks on suspicious vehicles by ordering them to reroute to inspection depots away from the border. So the words inspection depots leap out there. So that's new infrastructure as well. So these customs officers, they're ordering people to reroute now.
It sounds like your sat-nav.
Yeah, but you have a customs officer. Is that just like a customs officer turns up in a car and says, tells this van to move? Do they have a policeman with them? Where are these depots? It talks about designated roads as well. So I think we're into a situation there where we have cameras, depots and approved roads. Now, if you have those ingredients, I don't really think you have an answer. Because, as the Prime Minister said yesterday, in December 2017, the UK agreed with the EU to the avoidance of a hard border, including any physical infrastructure or related checks and controls, and those were commitments made in good faith. So, at the first hurdle, if you're having depots and cameras, you're falling. So, this is clearly a piece of work which was done by this Japanese technology company. It's only 11 pages, so
yeah,
it feels more like a brochure. And it just sounds very, very familiar to me.
Should we read anything into the fact that they've refused to confirm or deny? They've left that vagueness there.
I don't confirm or deny what. The thing exists. You know, the Sun have a picture of it.
Yeah, but they could easily say this is just a brochure. This isn't, you know, we're working for the department. for exit in the EU or we're not. You know, they could be more specific if they want.
Yeah, like a bunch of companies have done a bunch of things in terms of the border. Big consultancy company, McKinsey, they got actually paid quite a lot of money to kind of design this custom system for the government, which eventually everybody said wasn't going to work. So you'll have had a number of companies from technology and consultancy backgrounds who have been pitching various things, and the Department for Exiting the EU will have asked them to pitch various things. And, you know, we come back to all of this ultimately where people who are border experts effectively says you cannot just do it all through technology. You've got to be in a situation where you have a kind of a legal and a political framework and a relationship of trust to make these things work. You can't just turn, you know, the British government just couldn't turn up the Irish government and say, right, here's the technology and we're implementing it. Because you need the people on the other side of the border to operating in a sense of goodwill. So it's another idea. But just a cursory reading says it's not one that's going to work.
Okay. John Campbell, thank you very much. So let's go to the phones. Albert in Glengormley. Good morning, Albert.
Good morning, honey.
Go ahead. What do you think?
Well, first of all, it's a waste of a plane fare and a waste of accommodation.
For Theresa May?
For Theresa May.
Why?
Well, she knew all the views of the political parties over here. She knew the views of the... business people. She didn't need to come over here. And what did she turn out? She said she was going to get changes to the backstop. Well, she should be in Europe talking to the Europeans to get the thing changed.
That's tomorrow. But do you not think, Albert, is there nothing to be said about those face-to-face talks? The fact that she is coming over here and is having that conversation with the five main political parties here?
Over the last 2 years, Vinny, she's met them on numerous occasions. She's met probably the DUP in the last week or so, 10 days, at least 4 to 6 times. So she knows everybody's views, and all she has to do is get on with the job. But the problem with Theresa May is, at the very start, she took it on herself that she was going to organise and come up with a solution of everything of leaving the EU. And she basically accepted the backstop, and the DUP had to go at her, as you know, at that time. And then she backtracked on that. Then she went into negotiations again about the withdrawal agreement and came back with the backstop. And then she was defeated, as you know, in the House of Commons. And now she's the problem. And now she's trying to get a way out of it by saying, oh, we'll have a time limited. That's not a change that the Brexiteers, and she's letting down 17.4 million people, basically, that voted to leave the European Union.
Do you think another PM could do a better job?
Well, I said that to your researcher. They should have got an opportunity to get rid of and get her changed, and it would change the whole dynamics of the thing. Because if you look, you asked the question, why did two Secretary of States, a Brexit Secretary of State, basically leave her, because she was that pig-headed that she basically thought she was going to do this herself. What she should have done with the withdrawal agreement was she should have said to the Europeans, now the Commons are going to have a vote on this. I'm going to have to take it back there first and see how they feel on it before she decided to accept it. That's the way I would have done it.
Okay.
I'd have brought it back and said, look, what do you feel about this withdrawal agreement? And then if there was a vote on it, then she could have knew where she stood. What she did was she actually signed the paper and said, we are accepting this, and this is the mess that she's basically created over the last 2 years.
Okay.
It's down to her.
Albert, thank you. Let's go to Michael in Newton Abbey. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Vinny.
Go ahead.
I'm listening to the discussion. I listened, first of all, to Stephen Farry talking about reality. Now, Stephen needs to come into the real world himself, first of all. The people voted there will be an exit of the UK from the EU. Now, during the whole debate regarding Brexit and the backstop, the UK government have made it absolutely clear that they, under no circumstance, will facilitate, erect, or acquiesce in any way to a hard border. Now, the Irish government have also said the same. The EU, however, have said that that's not what they want, but they need to protect their trading border, their trading border.
Yeah, and that goes into what Stephen Farry said. He described this as a huge game of chicken, and someone has to blink.
No, hold on. Let me finish, please, Vinny. My point is this. If the UK stands firm, and this may be you calling chicken, I don't think it is calling chicken. Do you know what it's actually doing? It's exposing lies. Let's be blunt about it. If the UK government say quite categorically and stick by their word that they will not erect or facilitate any physical hard border. If the Irish government have said the same, but the problem the Irish government have is, as a member of the EU, they will have to facilitate the demands of the big brother, EU. So the Irish government will have a dilemma. Will they facilitate and therefore go back on their word by telling people that they will not facilitate a hard border? Will they give in and to the demand again of the EU, who have said they don't want one, they're working hard not to have one, but they need to facilitate the trading within their borders?
Okay, Michael, thank you. Nick in Lisburn next. Nick, you're up. Yeah, go ahead, mate.
Hi, Vinny. Yeah, good morning. Just my point on the hard border is that the hard border is not cameras, a number plate recognition. Those are symptoms of the hard border. They're consequences of the hard border. A hard border is the non-tariff barriers, the tariffs that will be applied, and the regulatory alignment that will be required between two different customs zones. It's impossible, absolutely impossible, not to have a hard border between two different customs zones. That's just a fact. There's nowhere in the world where there isn't a hard border between two different customs zones.
So what do you think is going to happen next, Nick? Because you've heard they've said on each side. They're all saying, they're going to stick by their guns.
They are, but if there's no deal, there will be a hard border. There will be a physical hard border. There has to be. The EU must protect its customs border. That's an absolute fact.
Okay, Nick, thank you. Harry next in Belfast. Harry, go ahead.
Hi, Vinny. Just a point I wanted to make. I've crossed the border from Northern Ireland down into the Republic three times recently. And on each occasion, shortly after crossing the border, this was in a bus, the bus service that runs from Belfast to Dublin Airport.
Yes.
On each of those three occasions, shortly after crossing the border, the bus has been stopped by a Garda patrol, pulled into the side of the road, and two officers have entered the bus and checked everybody's passport. And on the last occasion there, just a week or two ago...
And that's happened on three occasions to you, because I've got that bus a few times and that's never happened to me.
No, I'm talking about going on a bus.
Yeah.
Not in a private car.
No, I mean the bus.
Well, I've been on the bus three times recently. I travel quite a lot. And on each of the last three occasions, this is without doubt, I'm being straight up with you, the bus has been pulled over shortly after crossing the border into this side of the road by a Garda patrol. Two officers have entered the bus.
So your point is, Harry, that these checks are happening to some extent already when it comes to people.
The point I'm trying to make is that the Republic of Ireland have been very vociferous in saying that they don't want a hard border, but it would seem that they are already, de facto enforcing one.
Okay,
so,
Harry.
I mean, that has happened to me I think it's at least three, possibly four times.
I've done that bus many times. I have heard of that happening, Harry, but you must have just been fortunate or unfortunate that it's been on every time you've been on the bus. Harry, thank you for your call.